that was written shortly after his reign by angry enemies, possibly the priests of Marduk. Of course, they would have been furious about the cancellation of the Akitu festival. This source certainly makes it sound as though Nabonidus was determined to make Sin the chief god in place of Marduk. If that had been true, you can see why he wouldn't have been keen to go through with the Akitu festival. He still believed in Marduk, of course, and would have known that swearing a false oath to Marduk was asking for trouble. So maybe Tema, where he went into exile, was just a convenient place to live that was not Babylon. It didn't hurt that it was another center for the worship of the moon god. But in his inscriptions, Nabonidus seemed to still venerate the other gods, so he might not have been quite as heretical in his stance toward Marduk as his opponents suggested. If true, perhaps he moved to Tema because it was strategically important to the empire. It was on a number of trade routes, and Nabonidus sponsored the construction of some buildings there. Later Greek and Roman writers, and the author of the Book of Daniel, portrayed Nabonidus as insane, but people who wrote in his own time didn't mention this, so it probably wasn't true. There must have been a reason for his absence from Babylon, but scholars disagree about what it was. It seems that Nabonidus did think that Sin was a more powerful god than Marduk. He apparently proposed that the temple to Marduk in Babylon should be rededicated to the moon god. And he had an explanation. There was a crescent-shaped symbol in the temple that he believed seemed more appropriate to the moon god than to Marduk. But of course, no Babylonian would have approved of that. A scholar named Paul Alain Beaulieu at the University of Toronto has suggested that what Nabonidus was trying to do was not simply to usurp Marduk, but rather to develop a new theology. These new ideas would be more appropriate to an extensive empire made up of people with many different religious beliefs. Nabonidus might have been trying to convince people that several gods could be worshipped as the same god. Perhaps Sin and Marduk were the same. He wasn't necessarily trying just to impose the moon god on the people as a replacement for Marduk. Whatever his ambitions were, they didn't work. The priests of Marduk were incensed. They would have devoutly believed that the continued functioning of the whole universe depended on Marduk's veneration and on the restoration of the Akitu festival. They would have wanted Nabonidus out of power. And then the outside world intervened. While Nabonidus lived in exile from 553 to 543 BCE, a king named Cyrus was busily changing the political face of the Near East. He took the throne in Persia in 559, before Nabonidus was even king. Cyrus, at that time, was co-regent with his father, and Persia was a small kingdom, under the control of the Medes. But after 8 years, his father died, and Cyrus became the sole king of Persia. Right away, he rebelled against his overlord. He was able to conquer the army of the Medes in 550. Still, Nabonidus was away in Tema, and the overthrow of the king of the Medes probably didn't make a big impression on him. But Cyrus kept going. He turned his attention to the kingdom of Lydia in what is now Turkey, and he attacked. Cyrus was victorious there as well, and by 546 BCE, he had taken control of the Lydian capital of Sardis. Cyrus now moved his troops back towards the Persian heartland. At this point, Nabonidus may have started to get nervous. Persian empire was expanding, and Cyrus was repeatedly victorious. Finally, Nabonidus returned from Tema to Babylon during his 13th year on the throne. Right away, he removed many high officials from their positions, and he replaced them. They probably had disapproved of his religious reforms. In 540 BCE, Cyrus attacked Persia's western neighbor, Elam. The Persian Empire was getting dangerously close to Babylon. The Elamite capital of Susa was only 160 miles east of the Tigris River. The Elamites had a long and rich history as a power in the region. Sometimes they'd been subject to Mesopotamian kingdoms, but mostly they'd been independent, and often a thorn in the side of Mesopotamian kings. A century before this, in 647 BCE, the army of the Assyrian king Ashurbanipal had attacked Elam and sacked Susa. but the Assyrians hadn't been able to hold on to Elam for long. Hearing that Elam was under attack by the Persians seems to have worried Nabonidus. He called for all Mesopotamian city gods to be brought into Babylon. He might have done this to protect them, or perhaps he wanted their help in protecting his city. Either way, the absence of the divine statues left the people in their cities feeling as though they'd been abandoned. It doesn't seem to have made Nabonidus any more popular. Now that Elam was brought under Persian control, Cyrus's next obvious target was Babylonia. Would the Babylonians fight fiercely to defend their land? Did they? It depends on which account you read. There was a battle between the Babylonians and the Persians at the site of Opis, north of Babylon, and the Persians won. After that, though, according to some accounts, the Babylonians don't seem to have tried very hard to keep the Persians out. In 539 BCE, Cyrus took Babylon. According to his own account, he did it without a fight. Not just that, the people of Babylon welcomed him. In his words, they bowed to him and kissed his feet. Soon after this, Cyrus had a royal inscription drawn up and distributed to describe his Babylonian conquest. The most famous version of it was in the form of a clay cylinder buried in the ground as a foundation deposit. It's been called the Cyrus cylinder ever since it was discovered. Archaeologists have found other versions of the same text on tablets, which suggests that it was sent out as a sort of ancient press release. It's a fascinating text. It's written in cuneiform using the Akkadian language, which of course wasn't Cyrus's native tongue. It's also full of typical things that you'd expect a Mesopotamian king to say. Cyrus calls himself King of the World, Great King, Mighty King, King of Babylon, King of Sumer and Akkad, King of the Four Quarters. These are classic Mesopotamian titles, not Persian ones. Only after listing those does he add that he's also King of Anshan, that is Persia, and then he gives the names of his father, grandfather, and his ancestors. But he adds that his kingship was desired by Bel, which meant Lord, and was used to refer to Marduk. So he really presents himself as a legitimate Mesopotamian king. More than that, he says that Marduk sought him out and wanted him to rule in Babylon because the previous king, which would be Nabonidus, of course, had neglected his religious duties. He's pretty tough on Nabonidus. He writes that an incompetent person was installed to exercise lordship over his country. Irreverently, he put an end to the regular offerings. By his own plan, he did away with the worship of Marduk, the king of the gods. He continually did evil against Marduk's city. You can see how Cyrus made good use here of the unpopularity of Nabonidus. He describes things getting worse before he arrived. The gods being sent to Babylon, for example, and Nabonidus requiring a lot of forced labor. Then he says that Marduk surveyed and looked throughout all the lands, searching for a righteous king whom he would support. He called out his name, Cyrus, king of Anshan. According to this account, Cyrus took over control in Babylon because Marduk had asked him to. That is, Marduk chose Cyrus to rescue the Babylonians from the heresies of Nabonidus. He even said that Marduk marched at his side and, quote, delivered Nabonidus, the king who did not revere him, into his hands. And the people of Babylon rejoiced at Cyrus's kingship, and their faces shone. They greeted him with gladness and praised his name. At that point, Cyrus released the people from the kind of forced labor they had had to do for Nabonidus and let their gods go back to their cities. Now, obviously, this is propaganda. It's what he wanted people to believe about him. We can't be sure at all how happy the people of Babylon were that Cyrus liberated them from the rule of Nabonidus. Still, he was wise to use their language for his inscription and to use phrases that were familiar from previous Mesopotamian inscriptions. Cyrus was also wise to declare himself completely devoted to Marduk, even though Marduk wasn't a Persian god, of course. Cyrus was good to other people who lived in Babylon as well. The Bible records that the Jews living in exile were allowed to return to Jerusalem after Cyrus took power, Right from the start, Cyrus created his empire in a different way from the kings who came before him. He hadn't depended on creating fear in the population. He seems to have wanted to be loved. When he'd conquered the Medes 12 years earlier, he let the king live. And he even married the Median king's daughter. It was as though he was joining the Medes rather than oppressing them. His inscription has been described as the earliest expression of a king consciously attempting to rule a society of different nationalities and different faiths. In terms of the Babylonians, he made it clear that he understood their frustrations with Nabonidus and that he could solve the problem. Marduk would be happy again. The order of the universe would be restored. And Babylon did continue to be a stable and prosperous place. Plenty of documents survive from the period of Persian rule, showing that life went on pretty much as before. Only gradually did the Mesopotamian gods begin to fall out of favor. The cuneiform writing system was used less and less. New cities replaced some of the old Mesopotamian capitals. The Persian kings stopped coming to Babylon for the New Year's festival. And Babylon became one of many provincial cities paying tribute to the great Persian kings, who lived far away, ruling over the biggest empire the world had ever seen to that point. It extended all the way from the Indus River Valley to the Aegean Sea. Mesopotamian culture had lasted for more than 3,000 years, but by around the year 1, it was gone. It wasn't until cuneiform was deciphered in the 19th century that the amazing ancient history of Mesopotamia began to be rediscovered. Even so, the Mesopotamians left an incredible legacy to the world. They invented the very idea of writing. They built the world's first cities and figured out how people could live together by the thousands in relative peace and civility. They wrote down the earliest laws and created a judicial system that prized evidence and fairness, a system that still influences us today. They created mechanisms of diplomacy that never stopped being used. They studied the stars. They figured out how to calculate the dates of eclipses, and they anticipated the movements of the planets. Many achievements credited to the Greeks had their origins long before in Mesopotamia, like the calculation of the sides of a right-angle triangle, or the innovation of the phalanx formation in battle, or the names of the constellations. One Mesopotamian innovation has an impact on our lives every single day. You see, Mesopotamian mathematics was based on the number 60. For example, their system of weights and measures had 60 shekels in a mina, which weighed about a pound, and 60 minas in a talent. This was convenient, because 60 divides up easily into lots of different fractions. If you have 60 of something, then half that amount, or a third, or a quarter, or a fifth, or a sixth, those are all whole numbers. Having 10 as the basis of your number system is trickier. Calculating half of 10 is easy, but a third of 10, a fourth of 10, a sixth of 10, none of those are whole numbers. And we still have a few vestiges of that 60-based system. After all, we have 360 degrees in a circle, and 60 seconds in a minute, and 60 minutes in an hour. Thanks to the Mesopotamians for those. One thing that inspires me about the Mesopotamians is that they were so smart and thoughtful. My students, before taking my classes, often assume that the people of the ancient world were brutal and vicious, that they wouldn't have known how to be civilized. But that's not true at all. The Mesopotamians always tried to make things rational and fair in their culture and in their society. Like the tavern keeper in the Epic of Gilgamesh, written in the 19th century BCE, the Mesopotamians remind us to enjoy life. But you, Gilgamesh, let your belly be full. Enjoy yourself always, by day and by night. Make merry each day. Dance and play day and night. Let your clothes be clean. Let your head be washed. May you bathe in water. Gaze on the child who holds your hand. Let your wife enjoy your repeated embrace, for such is the destiny of mortal men. I want to thank you for joining me in this exploration of ancient Mesopotamian history and culture. The contemporary world shares a great deal with the Mesopotamians, and this is because they created many institutions that still exist today. We live in cities. We resolve conflicts in courts of law. We pay taxes. We tell stories. We write letters to faraway family members and friends. We pray, we sing, we get married, just as they did. On the other hand, our modern explanations of the things we see around us differ radically from theirs, as do many of our responses to human and natural events. We don't think the way they did, not at all. But the Mesopotamians had a rich experience of life, and the hundreds of thousands of documents that have survived since the Mesopotamians' time allow us a window into their world. In the future, as more documents are found and translated, we will continue to learn more and to develop an even deeper understanding of the men and women who first tackled the dilemmas of urban life.
We hope you have enjoyed these lectures from the Great Courses. Our courses are available online or via the free Great Courses app for smartphones and tablets, available on the App Store or Google Play. View our full library at thegreatcourses.com. Or as always, you can call our customer care representatives at 1-800-832-2412. Thank you very much.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.